We don't like talking about anger in church. I spent a lot of time thinking about this over the past week as I've had the dubious distinction of being the preacher on the Sunday when we get to the week on honest anger in our Honest to God series. I've thought about this a lot as I've spent time with Psalm 44 over the past week, considering how God is inviting us to be honest with our anger. We don't like talking about anger in church. And maybe it's because we believe in some sense that anger is always a harmful, sinful thing, an emotion that's inherently corrosive and damaging without redemption. For many of us, after all, we've spent our whole lives hearing messages about how we just need to get rid of our anger. Just let it go, they've said. Don't let it get to you. Sometimes, I confess, these messages even come from the pulpit, as turn the other cheek becomes a message about emotional self-control rather than the radically non-violent forgiveness that Christ showed in the face of aggression. Yes, it is definitely true that we do not like talking about anger in church. For ever since the ancient fathers classified wrath as one of the seven deadly sins, Christians around the world have wondered whether their natural feeling of anger was an inherently sinful, inescapable emotion that would ultimately land them in eternal punishment. Now, obviously, there is a point at which anger becomes sinful. I will not try to argue otherwise. Obviously, there is a point at which anger turns into anger management issues and rage turns into enraged violence. Obviously, there's a point at which anger becomes a fury so powerful that it harms ourselves and others and tears us away from God. But on the whole, I would argue that anger is a very normal part of human life. On the whole, anger is not something that we have to constantly and consistently reject. Because on the whole, anger is part of a faithful life. Consider for a moment the young father who has just been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. He has less than a year to live and 2 young children who will soon lose their only father. As he grieves the reality of his circumstance, he soon moves from denial and isolation into anger, asking, why? Why did this happen to me? Why is this happening to my family? How long must I suffer? Or consider the mothers of the movement, those black women who have lost their children to questionable police violence over the last several years. Though their circumstances vary widely, for sure, each one of those mothers bore their child into a world shaped by the echoes of racism, a world where black men are 6 times more likely to be the victim of a gun-related homicide than white men. And so as these mothers have grieved the reality of their circumstance, they have moved quickly from sadness to anger, asking, why? Why did this happen to my child? Why is this happening to our community? How long must we suffer? Or consider working class Americans across our nation, those communities that have felt left out and left behind over the last 8 years. They look around and see the American dream falling apart as blue-collar jobs are sent overseas. And feeling out of control and out of time, many across our nation have turned from disappointment to anger, seeking a radical change. And so somewhere behind all the rhetoric, we can hear Americans across the nation angrily asking, why? Why did this happen to my job? Why is this happening to my town? How long must we suffer? Yes, I'll admit that in each instance, anger could easily spiral out of control and turn to destruction. But this is not the only course for anger to take. Not if we are honest to God. For when we are honestly angry before God, our God is big enough and faithful enough to handle it. Now, I've been in church services my entire life. Literally, since I was old enough to sit up in a pew, I have been in a pew at 11 a.m. on Sunday mornings. And in most churches, if we're honest and if you're lucky, there's about 5 minutes during the service where it's okay to voice the struggle in your life. It's called joys and concerns. There's a 5-minute window. But in most churches, otherwise, most Christian worship is so focused on praise and joy that it can be downright painful to come to church if you are dealing with a fresh loss or struggling with infertility. And I bet that if you took a snapshot of each service, a sample of the tone and an image of the pastor's smiling faces, you just might get the impression that being a Christian means putting on a stained glass masquerade, one that hides brokenness and failing and anger from God and from those people around you. But in reality, our scriptures tell a different story. In reality, the biggest category of the Psalms is lament psalms. And in reality, God has a long history of listening to the cries of his people. Because God listened when Abram spoke with chutzpah to defend the people of Sodom. And God listened when the people in Egypt cried out for redemption. And Christ listened when a desperate mother talked back to him as a way of getting him to heal her daughter. Our God has a long history of listening to the desperate cries of his people. Now, when I read the psalm, I imagine the nation of Israel in exile. There's some dispute over when this psalm was written. Maybe it was written after exile. Maybe it was written in the days of King David and then used in exile. But when I read this psalm and its shift from certainty into questions, I picture the nation of Israel in exile in Babylon. After all, they've spent generations living in the promised land, learning the story of Exodus and faithfully praying, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." And yet, after decades of faithful living, the flock finds itself now dragged off to Babylon like sheep for a slaughter, scattered among the nations. And so feeling betrayed, lost, and alone, the entire nation of Israel takes up the cry in this psalm, wrestling with God and demanding a response. Now, I don't know about you, but for many of us who have grown up with a black and white understanding of faith, where God is good and questions are scary, this psalm can be a little unsettling. Accusing God and asking these questions, are we allowed to do that in church? Doesn't it sound an awful lot like that angry atheism? And yet, for the nation of Israel, wrestling with God is the most faithful way to live. See, you got to remember that the nation of Israel didn't just pick its name out of a hat. They got their name from the man Israel, once known as Jacob. And if you remember the story of Jacob, Jacob was born one of two sons, Jacob and Esau. And as a young man, he tricked his brother Esau into giving him his inheritance. And so, as you would suspect, Jacob got run out of town after this trick. And so 20 years later, Jacob, after getting married and building a large household filled with wealth, Jacob decides to come back to his homeland and reunite with his family. And so in Genesis 32, we meet Jacob as he's by the Jabbok River. He sends his family and his household across the river so that he can have some time alone at night in the desert. And the story goes that as he sat there, an Ish, is translated angel of the Lord or God himself, came and wrestled with Jacob. And in the process of that wrestling, Jacob demands a blessing. And the angel changes his name from Jacob to Yisrael. And then, this is my favorite part, the angel says, your name won't be Jacob any longer, but Israel, because you struggled with God and with men and won. I love this part of Jacob's story because from then on, the whole nation, all his descendants, adopt this name Israel, which means those who struggle with God. Struggling with God, arguing with God, wrestling with God is built into the identity of God's people from the very beginning. The angel, the Ish, says, you have struggled with God and with men and have won. Which, for me, raises the question, how exactly do you win when you're wrestling with God? To which the rabbis respond, whenever you struggle with the divine, you cannot lose. Because if you are wrestling with God, then if you are in the fight, you have already won. You are already being faithful. It's only when you cease to struggle, when you walk away, that you have failed in your faith. See, we don't like to talk about anger in church, and it feels a little bit like betrayal sometimes to admit that we sometimes want to pin God down, tackle him and pin him down until we receive a blessing. But what the psalmist knows, and what Jacob knows, and what Jesus in the temple-turning tables knew, is that it is okay to be angry before God. It is okay to be angry at God. Because it is better to stand before God and unleash your rage than to walk away from the conversation altogether. It's better to wrestle with God at the river than to abandon the journey. It's better to walk through the valley of the shadow of death with the shepherd that you just keep yelling at than to pretend that there is no valley of darkness in your soul. When I was in middle school, I was finally old enough and smart enough to start to truly unleash my anger upon my family. I was a delight. I was generally in control of my emotions, but the moment I hit the last straw, I would rage throughout the house, yelling at whoever would listen. Now, at the time, my older sister was in high school, and whether it was from a deep well of compassion or whether it was possibly from a need to provoke me further, she had a certain knack for waiting it out, standing really still while I yelled, and then simply asking, are you done? I'd rant and I'd rave and I'd get all worked up and I'd vent it all out, and then at the end she'd simply be waiting, are you done? And when I read Psalm 44, I imagine God listening in this same way. When Israel prays in desperation, get up, God, are you going to sleep all day? I imagine God patiently sitting, listening without defensiveness, receiving each of the psalmist's accusations, and deeply empathizing with the pain of his children. And then when the psalmist concludes, help me, I imagine God asking, with that deep compassion of a father, are you done? When we are honestly angry at God, God is always ready to help pick up the pieces. Here's the key. When your life is completely shattered, you have to give the pieces to God instead of clinging to the broken shards and pretending somehow that they're not cutting you. Even if you angrily throw the broken pieces of your life before God, even if you lay it all at God's feet and then hold God accountable, that is still an act of faith. Because let's face it, atheists don't bother getting angry at the God that they don't even believe in. It is always an act of faith to turn to God in anger when the alternative is walking away entirely. Friends, God never promised that everything would be easy. And in fact, the opposite is true throughout Scripture. But God did promise to always be with us. And so even when we find ourselves honestly angry, crying out to God for an explanation, we are never alone. For in the end, God is ready to journey with us to the most broken places so that God can help pick up the pieces and show us what it means to be whole. Thanks be to God.